With so many people staying at home, a lot of folks have lost track of the days. I can tell you this, it's Friday, and not a moment too soon. But then again, what does Friday actually mean? Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Our daily podcast is focused on COVID-19, and we're so thankful that KUNM has put us on the airwaves this week. We were here all week long at 8 p.m. Thank you so much, KUNM, for hooking us up. What has changed in what you care about? Yes, that's the theme for today. A little bit philosophical. We want to figure out what's changed in people's priorities. We're only a few weeks into the stay-at-home order, and people have had a lot of time to ponder what really matters to them. We've got a report from delivery drivers who found out that their priorities are changing. We talked to the Department of Health Secretary. Governor Lujan Grisham gave a speech. We have some of her remarks here for you. This is Your New Mexico Government. If you've been listening to the show this week, thank you very much, KUNM. Or if you subscribe to the podcast, thank you if you did. You should know that we have a hotline and we want to hear from you. Call 505-218-7084 and we will take your questions and put them on the air. That number again, 505-218-7084. Or you can email us at yournmgov@gmail.com. Now it's time for a news update. Executive producer Marisa DeMarco is here with a quick rundown of what we know today, April 3rd, as of 5 p.m.
President Trump won't issue a national stay-at-home order, and a handful of states in the South and Midwest still haven't issued one. Other governors have asked them to, public health officials have asked them to, residents of those states are calling for one. The New York Times reports that as of this evening, 9 states are holding out. In 4 of them, cities and counties went ahead and issued their own stay-at-home orders. Still, in 5 states, there's nothing at all yet. Arkansas, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Experts are warning the coronavirus is likely to, quote, exploit those gaps. Trump also said the election is definitely on for November, and he's not in favor of voting by mail because people need to show voter IDs, he said. Nationally, the death toll from COVID is well over 7,000, and the number of cases reached 270,000. In New Mexico, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham is working on a plan to let nonviolent offenders out of the state's jails and prisons, and she said 40 inmates around the state are being released. In New Mexico today, the number of confirmed cases hit 495. It was a big jump. 3 people died, bringing the total here to 10. In Albuquerque, there was an outbreak in a retirement community called La Vida Llena. 2 people from the facility have died. New projections say the state will only have about a quarter of the intensive care beds it needs when the outbreak here is at its worst. And there's expected to be a shortage of ventilators. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
KUNM's Nash Jones spoke with delivery drivers who found that their priorities are changing. Though they work for apps, what's really keeping them in the game is the necessity of the service they're providing to people who really can't leave their houses at all. Here's that.
The coronavirus pandemic has created barriers to going to the grocery store for some, especially those at high risk of having a severe case of COVID-19, like older people or those who are immunocompromised. For those who need groceries but cannot, should not, or are fearful of facing the health risks of shopping, grocery delivery apps like Instacart and Shipt are becoming less of a luxury and more of a necessity. I spoke with 3 grocery delivery gig workers here in New Mexico. 2 based out of Santa Fe.
My name is Sam Houses. I'm a driver for Instacart.
My name is Debbie Richards, and I'm, I guess, what you would call a gig economist.
And 1 in Albuquerque.
My name is Corinne Anderson, and I am a Shipt shopper. That's S-H-I-P-T.
Each one of them worked for their respective delivery app gigs before the coronavirus pandemic began. I wondered what it looked like to provide the increasingly essential service of delivering groceries to their neighbors. How would you say things have changed since the stay-at-home order was put in place?
Oh, goodness, drastically. So I went from probably averaging about 25 to 30 orders a week to 2 weeks ago, I did 60. This last week, I did 43 orders in a week.
Devi said the changes started even before the March 23rd stay-at-home order.
I would say Friday the 13th-ish, and maybe a little bit before that, things started ramping up. And ramping up means that there were always shopping opportunities. Before this crisis happened, there would be times when there were no batches available.
Not only are there more customers, but who those customers are have changed. As many who are particularly at risk for complications of COVID-19 turn to grocery delivery apps in order to avoid the store.
I'm delivering to families that have newborns, pregnant moms, a lot of older people, people with immune deficiency, and a few that have been quarantined, honestly.
With a new customer base, Debbie Richards said the gig work she's been doing since February has taken on new meaning.
I feel like it's an important time to do this work. I feel like I'm capable and I'm willing to help people who really shouldn't go outside or who are afraid to go outside.
That new sense of duty and importance hasn't been lost on the customers. Corin Anderson of Albuquerque said that with customers who have her delivering to their elderly parents and grandparents, she's experienced a deeper sense of connection.
And appreciation. I am overwhelmed with people being so appreciative of what I'm able to do. And I actually feel very blessed right now that I have this job where I can provide this assistance.
While Sam said he hasn't necessarily seen that appreciation translate into larger tips, Corin and Devi have, at least most of the time.
98% are tipping more and are grateful and are patient and kind.
I got a $50 tip the other day. These people understand that I'm out on the front lines.
When Corin phrased it like that, the front lines, it had me wondering what she and others are doing to protect themselves and what the apps they work for are doing to support them. All three gig workers I spoke with had a comprehensive hygiene routine. Sam said his happens both before and after entering the grocery store.
Most people carry sanitary stuff and wipe down their cars. I try to sanitize myself after I leave as well. As soon as I get home, I throw my clothes inside the washing machine, put it on hot, and go take a shower.
Devi, who shops in Santa Fe like Sam does, has an even more thorough routine in an effort to stay healthy as she heads in and out of grocery stores multiple times a day.
I put hand sanitizer on, I put gloves on, I use the disinfectant on the carts. When I'm done with the shop, I peel off the gloves and throw those in the trash. And then I use hand sanitizer in my car, on my keys, on the Instacart debit card. I'm not close to people when I'm shopping. I take my temperature 3 or 4 times a day just to make sure.
Corin added that the stores themselves are working to keep their shoppers safe.
Target and Smith's, they have employees that are wiping down all the carts.
But the apps themselves, Instacart and Shipt, haven't been supplying their shoppers, who are independent contractors for the companies, with the safety products that they're so diligently using. This was one issue at the center of an Instacart worker strike on March 30th. Strike organizers asked the company to supply workers with hand sanitizer and wipes, along with $5 of hazard pay per delivery, minimum 10% tips, and sick leave for those with pre-existing conditions. I outlined the demands for Debbie Richards, who participated in the strike.
I don't think any one of those is unreasonable. And I think it seems like a package that's a very equitable thing for Instacart to do for its people who have been working out here when other people don't and won't.
It was the demands around economic equity that resonated most.
They're making a lot of money on my back. The workers, the people who are out here buying groceries, delivering them, driving all around town, they are not paying that forward at all to us.
Sam, the other Instacart shopper, didn't strike, but wasn't totally opposed to the organizers' demands either.
I kind of feel like shopping for other people, if they can't do their own shopping, is a little bit more important than the strike. But I do think that the strike had some valid issues. It wasn't until yesterday that we got any sort of notification that we would be getting hand sanitizer. The 10% mandatory tip thing would be nice.
In terms of the sick pay, any thoughts?
Well, you know, that would be great. If I get sick, that means I can't work. So there should be some sort of process.
That notification that Sam got about receiving hand sanitizer was part of Instacart's response to the strikers' demands. Instacart announced that it will have its own hand sanitizer made and distributed free to shoppers who request it. It also is extending its previous offer of 2-week sick leave for those diagnosed with or quarantined for COVID-19 1 month until May 8th, though it's not expanding who qualifies for it. While not requiring a 10% tip, Instacart says they'll adjust the app to encourage better tipping by defaulting to a customer's last use percentage. And as for the $5 of hazard pay, it's not happening. But the company has offered bonuses based on hours worked between March and April 15th. Corin Anderson works for Shipt, not Instacart, so wasn't involved in the strike. But I still wanted to get her take. Some Instacart workers started striking. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it. I don't agree with it. For me, right now, I think these people are being greedy. It's not all about the money. I think you have to have your heart in it right now, and you have to be willing to help people. I'm just going to give you a brief example. I had a customer the other day. I picked up her order in the evening. She's a regular of mine, so I picked it up. I'd already finished shopping for the day, but saw it was out there. So I sent her a text, told her that I was getting ready to go out and shop for her, but I knew for sure that Target didn't have toilet paper or paper towel. She said the order was for her parents. They were pretty much completely out and that she'd just take them baby wipes. I had a full package of paper towel and a full package of toilet paper in my garage that I had not opened yet. So I took them and dropped them on her porch along with her order.
Instacart has taken to calling shoppers heroes, and not just those like Corin who gift customers toilet paper from their own stocks.
When you open the batches, it has a little blurb about, yes, you're the Instacart hero.
But both Instacart shoppers, Debbie and Sam, questioned the company's sincerity around that messaging.
I haven't ever gotten a text message or anything in the mail. I don't hear anything in the media talking about how Instacart values us. I think it's easy for them to throw words out like that to make them maybe look better to other people. I don't know.
You know, it's a soulless corporation. I think that as a shopper right now, kind of being haphazardly thrown into this situation, I don't know, there's a certain sense of self-gratitude that you feel that you're helping people out.
When I asked Corin if she planned to continue in this work despite its risks to her health, Sam's sentiment came up for her as well, that regardless of how these apps authentically feel about the work being done or the workers who are doing it, delivering groceries is a way for the shoppers, the folks who, as she said, are on the front lines, to meaningfully contribute in this time of need.
Right now, it's not just about the money. Yes, it is my form of income right now, but it's about helping those who can't get out, making sure people have food on the table, making sure they have those basic necessities, and keeping people that shouldn't be in the stores out of the stores. So I will continue it, absolutely. There's no question.
Debbie and Sam say they also plan to stick with their gigs for as long as they're able. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Nash Jones.
Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham held a news conference today updating the stay-at-home order and asking people in the state to do better, particularly when it comes to shopping at big box stores. Part of the problem, she said, is that the state is a high-risk state because of age demographics.
Our formal orders extending our instructions to stay home and the closure of business and the identification of essential businesses will be extended through April 30th. Now, you saw when we expect last week of April, first part of May, when we think these surges are going to occur. It only makes sense that in connection with making sure that we've maintained school closures, that we're very clear that we need you to keep doing this work, and we know that it's hard. You should also expect that we're going to change the way in which folks can get big box stores, including Home Depots and Lowe's and Walmarts and Targets. We're still going there in crowds, and I know that people need the merchandise and the groceries and the personal items that are sold at these stores, but I need you to do better. For example, in big box stores, that you can only have this many employees and you can only have this percentage in the store at any one time based on what your fire marshal indicated capacity is. Because what we've done so far quite hasn't taken hold. That we're seeing what certainly appears from the outside, where people are, and I get it, staying at home is hard. It is incredibly hard. But when I have 300 or 400 or 500 people who attempt, and I know there are lines outside, and I know that people think that they're 6 feet apart, but it's too much human contact, and it's too much socialization in a context that we did not intend. As you will hear in our modeling, given our healthcare and aging, our healthcare issues and our aging population, this is a state just in that context that is a high-risk state, which means, again, we all have to do more to protect families and to protect New Mexicans.
Department of Health Secretary Kathy Kunkel said the virus is spreading not only through fluids, but can travel in the air. So the state is recommending masks.
We know now that the virus can be spread by asymptomatic people. So if they're wearing a mask, they can reduce the spread that way. We also know now that the virus does not have to be spread by droplets or sneezing, that it can be just in the air that someone breathes. So for those two reasons, I think that it is a prudent strategy to start wearing some type of covering when you leave the house. Again, we cannot use medical grade equipment, but we are hoping that the CDC comes out with guidance. We have community spread in most of the state. I can't give you every county, but I think it's safe to say that we are not seeing initial positives from travel the way we were initially. We are developing a way with the governor to provide better data, more towards cities as opposed to just counties, but I have to make sure that there's no personal health information that is disclosed, because some of our communities are very small. So we're working hard to get that up soon. There have been a lot of requests to me to provide that, and we will do that as soon as we can.
This is your New Mexico government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We've been grateful to be on the air all week long, covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people around the state. We talk to people inside jails and prisons, folks experiencing homelessness, and people who live on tribal lands. Yesterday, we talked about hospitals in different parts of New Mexico and what they're doing to prepare. You can find all of those episodes online at KUNM.org. And you'll keep hearing us next week, every weeknight at 7:30 p.m., part of our coverage today, we want to talk about what it's like for retail employees who are considered essential. Do they feel like they're getting enough from their employers, and do they feel safe coming into work? Here with me is a friend, comedian, and organizer and event thrower about town, also an essential retail employee, Mr. Royal Wood. Royal, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Khalil. It's crazy right now. It's super crazy.
What's crazy?
Like, that's only everything that's going on right now, you know?
Okay, so tell me, how do you feel about that? Like, first of all, how do you feel? Are you and your family doing okay?
Yeah, like, honestly, everybody's good. Like, I spoke to my mom the other day. She was in high spirits. She's been a registered nurse pretty much all of her life. So she knows about, like, you know, protecting herself, especially protecting herself for, like, viruses and everything. The crazy thing for me was just the fact of, like, even talking to you on the phone right now. Like, the last time I saw you was over at that show that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy to be like, oh, dang, I normally see this dude on the daily, and now I don't.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. And, yes, it is necessary for, like, if anybody out there quarantine, yes, it is necessary. You know, it sucks, but we want to get better so we can have our summer, so you can have our fall.
What's it like at work?
So I work at Target, and I see everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. I see the people who are just, like, living their life like it's normal, you know. I see a lot of people in workout gear, because a lot of people are actually doing a jogging and stuff, which I still don't understand. But then you see the people who got the gloves and the mask, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, they're super worried. They're carrying around, like, their wet wipes and, like, you know, their Purell and everything. This is where we're at right now. This is where people's mindsets are at.
You know, at work, as far as employees, have they given you all any personal protection equipment? Have they given you all gloves and masks?
Target actually is mandated for, they have people to go around pretty much every 15 to 30 minutes just to wipe down all the counters.
Okay.
And so almost on clockwork, you'll see somebody, gloves, sanitary equipment, is wiping down everything. The funny thing is, everybody's coming over to get Nintendo Switches. And the reason why is because all the kids are home, and they don't know, and they don't know what to do with them. So they're like, oh, look at a Switch. Which is funny, because back in the day, somebody saying, oh, let's get a Switch wasn't really a good thing.
No, it was a whole different connotation on that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a different type of deal. Honestly, like, the crazy thing was the headsets. because I know a lot of my friends, they work at home, they do telework and whatnot. Like, you know, I have a couple of friends work at T-Mobile. So, like, a lot of people were coming in to get the headsets, but the headsets that had the USB, not the regular 3.5, because for their work and whatnot, that's what was needed. And so, like, the crazy thing is Best Buy shut down. And so, like, they closed down, like, us and I believe Walmart and all the other, like, Walmart-type brands, like Sam's Club, I believe we're still open. And, like, maybe a little mom-and-pop shop here and there. But other than that...
You guys are, like, the only game in town. Yeah, for that. And okay, so how are your colleagues with each other? Are any colleagues worried that, I mean, they're not giving you all masks? Are gloves optional? Can you come into work with gloves and manager or supervisor isn't going to say anything? Are the managers and supervisors walking around with gloves and masks on?
Oh, yeah, no. Some want to do gloves. We really don't have anybody with masks. And so we have gloves and masks available for everybody to have if they want to go that route.
Okay.
And my supervision there, they've never really been like, oh, wow, so he's wearing gloves and masks. Like, okay, we may have to question him. It's like, okay, we see that somebody's trying to protect themselves, knowing for a fact that they're going to be with the populace on a regular basis on our floors, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm working in the bag, like, you know, putting stuff on the shelves and I go back. Like, I'm actually talking to people on a daily basis.
Now, do you all feel that... the people of Target, corporate, and the management, the general manager, do you feel like they're informing you as in regards to the policies and what they're trying to do to make sure that you all are protected?
So the crazy thing is I work at Target, but I don't work for a Target. I'm pretty much outsourced from another company.
Okay.
Now, the other company gives us updates pretty much every day. Like this week, I've been on at least 3 to 4 conference calls. All my day offs, mind you. Just like, you know, updating everybody about what's going on, what's the new procedure, what's like, you know, happening and everything. So, I mean, we are updated on a day-to-day basis. I've spoken to my DM more this week than like really any other DM that I've worked for.
Okay.
Now, mind you, yes, it is good. I'm not saying like anything negative about any of my other DMs. Like, y'all listening, y'all good. But it's still just the fact of like, okay, they're making sure that we have this information.
Yeah. Now, how do your colleagues feel about that?
Personally, you know me, I'm always cracking jokes and stuff like that. But like whenever I'm around my colleagues, I try to have that same energy. But like, I really don't see like a change in a lot of people. Now, mind you, I haven't been working there long, but from the time span that I have been working over there, I haven't really seen any just like people freaking out or just hair pulling, just like, what's going on and stuff like that. Like, no, we see it as a like pretty much like, okay, this is happening, but we're still here. And the thing of it is, a lot of us know for a fact that since we're still there, we're still getting paid, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's another thing about it too. Like a lot of my friends have been laid off, like their jobs and everything. I'm blessed to be able to still work, you know?
Yeah. Now, have they given you all any type of bonuses or raises or time and a half because you're technically working under hazardous conditions?
We actually did, for my department, did get a dollar raise. That actually started last week.
Okay.
No, I take that back. I want to say Friday. It just started Friday. So, from our base pay. We work on a whole different type of system, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so y'all feel like you're being compensated. You feel like you're being informed as far as their policies and things, and you feel like they're making every step physically at the location to protect all of you.
Correct.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty good. Real briefly, I mean, that's really good because there's other employees. I mean, Instacart, they're striking. Amazon people have gone on strike.
Yeah,
you know,
we were talking about that before.
Yeah, there's a lot of businesses that aren't looking out for their employees while they demand they come into work during these precarious and frankly, slightly, you know, not slightly, but very dangerous times. Before I let you go, what do you think we can learn from this?
We just need to take better care of each other, and we need to appreciate the time that we spend with each other because this social distancing is driving a lot of people insane. I see people like, you know, yeah, they're going out, they're getting essentials, but they're going back home, you know? Like somebody's TV went out, and they just had to come in to get a new TV, but it was like, okay, they're not getting this TV because, oh, it's a luxury. They're getting this TV because it's a necessity now.
Yeah.
So it's like mindset has switched, but when we do come out of this as a world. Mm-hmm. I feel that we will be able to appreciate one another's company. We'll be able to treat each other better just because there was a time where we weren't able to have each other.
Yeah.
And so just being able to be better people to each other.
That's right. Well, I appreciate you, my friend. And I want to thank you very much.
I appreciate you.
I want to thank you so much.
No problem.
For being on the show, Royal. It's Royal Wood, comedian. You check him out on all the Instagram and Facebook models. And just thank you so much again for being here, man. Take care of yourself. Be healthy, all right?
Hey, take care, dude.
Maybe like us, you've been on the phone or on a video chat with your friends and family a lot this week and having profound conversations. It's about being connected to one another and really finding how this is affecting us. Executive producer Marisa DeMarco also often works in New Mexico organizing around music and art. She reached out to friends and family who do community organizing work to talk about what was changing for them on micro and macro levels as we are all pulled into isolation.
I decided to call my sister. We're talking today about what's changing and what you care about during the pandemic. So tell me, Monica DeMarco, my sister, how has this shifted your perspective?
Well, I guess to give people some context, I'm a professional musician and a social worker pursuing my master's at New Mexico Highlands. And a lot of my life kind of before COVID was around community organizing, you know, organizing shows, organizing recitals, the things I'm doing my practicum at SWAP, the Southwest Organizing Project, and a lot of what I was doing was organizing events and gatherings and face-to-face exchange kind of things, because that's a really core part of what I like to do. And so now all of a sudden, all of that is gone, and I'm being expected to sort of pivot all of my, I'm sure like everybody, my work, my organizing, all of that, and still kind of in the grief process for the life that I used to have. I think a lot of people are experiencing the stages of grief around a loss of a way of life, and I'm definitely feeling that.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what was important to you about organizing face-to-face events or group events? What about that especially felt important?
Well, and I mean, I'm sure a lot of teachers are feeling this too. There's a special kind of magic that happens with interpersonal exchange. There's a lot of information that we're getting from people when we're teaching that comes from being sitting down in person with them. You know, it's not just what you say or kind of what you're doing. It's like reading people through an intuitive sense and having some intuitive knowledge about what's going on for them that helps you better teach them. At least I'm speaking about like piano teaching right now, that you don't get in any other platform. That's now just gone. It feels to me like having one of my biggest senses or best talents is like removed from everything that I'm doing.
Sure, sure. As you're thinking about it, as you're thinking about making this shift, I know you did a lot of organizing around musical events and creative endeavors. You know, we were talking last night, you're shifting priorities and you're trying to help with preparing supplies and working with the effort to make masks, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my skill set is also around like macro types of thinking and macro types of work. And so that shifting from like gatherings and events, and I'm trying to use those skills to help make connections between different organizations like the New Mexico Craft Responders, and trying to hook them up with different people that need masks and healthcare for the homeless, and trying to use some of that macro thinking in a new way that no longer is like invested in interpersonal exchange. So it's involving a lot of creativity to try to figure out how to use those skills in a new way.
We're both musicians, and we know the long haul benefits of creative practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a way that you've shifted, and also I've shifted, to just trying to meet this emergent need, right? Which is maybe less about overall wellness, and we're like trying to help prevent some pressing health issues.
Exactly.
From yeah.
Yeah. I think it's because a lot of the issues that I was organizing around that were like, a lot of them were like educational things. So like trainings around LGBTQ issues or the self-defense class that we teach, like recitals and all that. It's like none of that can take place unless we solve this much more pressing issue now of keeping people alive and keeping people safe. And so, you know, it's almost like all of these other issues, while still important, like they can't happen if everybody's going to get sick. So they're just not a priority. And so that's a really big shift in the end of getting my graduate degree in social work, is like all of the values, all the things that I was organizing around, they're secondary to what we're dealing with right now, which is the crisis situation. Yeah, this has to happen first.
Okay, so we have Ebony Isis Booth on the line. You probably recognize her voice from DJing Afternoon Freeform here at KUNM. She's also...
Hi.
Hi. She's also a community organizer. Hi, Ebony, from a distance.
Hi. How are you from a distance?
Yeah, good. Getting used to all this, not seeing anyone.
Yeah, that's been different.
Yeah, I mean, we are still reaching out to each other through whatever communication platform. There is a way that everyone has a little more time just hanging out by themselves. And our thinking was maybe that gives people time to reflect on some stuff. Have you found that to be true for yourself?
I have found that to be extraordinarily true for myself. I am constantly going in spaces where I'm trying to figure out how to get large demographics of people on the same page around certain issues or with a purpose in mind. And so having to really do that with myself now, right? And so I am looking at unifying all the parts of myself that kind of get scattered around in different projects or priorities or needs and other individuals for a lot of different reasons. And so now I am at a place where I have been able to slow down and look at what benefit there would be if I use some of those tools to work on myself. And it has been beautiful and also a little, you know, scary, because sometimes we don't get to distract ourselves so easily anymore now that we are required to be still and be in place.
So you're talking about taking your skills that you use in organizing kind of larger group events and applying them to yourself. Like, are there specific skills that you found really useful that you're applying to your own solo life right now?
This is strange. I think that my views on diplomacy, as far as making space for multiple opinions and perspectives to be heard, is something that I think is really important for us to be in authentic and conscious relationships with each other and to actually be engaged. On an individual level, there, you know, there's your shadow self, there's your representative self, there's the self that you kind of really don't deal with too tough because maybe they did something to cause some disadvantage to you back in, you know, high school. I don't know, whatever parts of ourselves we have lost or sacrificed along the way of just becoming who we are in the now, right? So applying that skill of diplomacy to kind of give space and time for each of those parts of myself to, you know, speak their truth, say what they need, to acknowledge, to show myself some compassion and care and preparedness. I'm kind of curating spaces for myself to feel safe and comfortable in, as opposed to for an audience, right? Mm. And then once those parts of myself have arrived at a space, I think it's important to really honor those feelings, the emotions that come up, the frustration, all, like, to just kind of sit with them and give myself space and time to just see what they need to say, you know, because in running around like a maniac, doing, producing, participating, trying not to get crushed by the machine, we don't really have a lot of time to acknowledge the less desirable, less polished parts of ourselves.
Yeah. And talking just a little bit about being more present, I find that pre-COVID, as I'm running around the city doing whatever, I'm often like really stuck in my head. And just kind of rolling on autopilot in a lot of my interactions with people at the grocery store or at the gas station or whatever. And I just, I think there's been such a big recognition that everybody that we interact with right now is kind of putting themselves on the line to keep, you know, providing food or gas or whatever it is, right? So there's a way that I'm like newly conscious when I am outside of my house doing one of those things that I can't get by without doing.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to be so, like, so warm to everybody. Like, I'm trying to really see everybody and trying to be really present, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
What does that feel like to you? Like, does that benefit the experience of having to go out and be in public, considering all the anxieties that come up with social distance? Like, how does that feel to practice being present with the people you interact with? Is it helpful?
Yeah, yeah, it's super helpful. And I mean, honestly, just the thing I feel the most about it is like kind of shame that I wasn't doing it better before. You know, like I spent all these decades being just on autopilot and just kind of rolling through some transactions and interactions without any consciousness at all, or, you know, bare minimum attention, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's beautiful, this idea of just like getting present and sitting in the now. Might be really hard for some folks. I'm not, this is just kind of what I'm finding is working for me this week and this moment, like this morning, watering my plants, you know, and making some lunch. That's what I'm doing right now, as opposed to being like crushed against an agenda or rushing into a meeting and not realizing what kind of tornado I might be bringing with me into a space. So to actually look forward to the opportunity to treat people better.
Yeah.
But I think that that's an extension of treating ourselves better. This work of like of maintaining health and safety and surviving is really important. And it's a critical skill that I believe is really rooted in love. And so we spend a lot of time talking about self-care and self-esteem and self-love as concepts. I think that the work that goes into just maintaining your health and sanity, staying properly nourished, and just the idea of safety is a privilege and a commodity. And I think that we should really embrace the opportunity, but also understand how important and necessary that skill set is.
Okay, here's the last one. Eliza Lutz organizes around music, shows, and events at multiple venues up in Santa Fe. And that's the bulk of her income. She also runs a regional label called Matron Records, and she's a total shredder in her band Future Scars. We talked a little bit about the decision she made a couple of weeks ago to cancel all the shows she had coming up as we all started retreating more and more into isolation.
I felt like that apprehension of like, or is there going to be a backlash? Are people going to be upset? But I think it was good to feel like supported by the state guidelines and state mandates. And then felt like this trickle down where then all of the musicians were like sad, but also really happy that they didn't have to make the call to cancel, that it's like this top down thing that we're all like, okay, we're supported from the next level up to like shut stuff down.
Yeah. And it's a hard call to make because there's a way that when things are challenging, we all get together and play music or listen to music, and it feels like a salve. It feels like a thing that helps.
I think even back to like the first time I think I met you, which was at that Thursday night girl fight that happened the Thursday after the Tuesday presidential election. And that was kind of the last time I felt the same sense of like everyone maybe around you being on the verge of breaking out into tears and it not feeling weird at all and feeling like this massive sorrow and anger and all this like melting pot of emotions. I feel like I'm so used to feeling those emotions more commonly in private, and then to feel it when you kind of are like held by everyone feeling at the same time is a really unique feeling. And feeling that particularly like in a show space, and then say watching you and Chuchata play and feeling so held in this space where you are face to face and there's music and there's like, that's where you want to be. So having that same sort of feeling of, you know, massive sorrow and apprehension on an even bigger scale affecting the whole world, but not being able to like sway in a crowd to the music your friends are making is really a conflict, a weird conflict, I guess.
Yeah, in a hard situation, like we're all being asked to endure things and we're all being asked to endure them alone. Is there a way that you're finding to channel your creativity and your organizing skills? I mean, you're one of the best organizers I know. Is there a way that you're able to channel those things into new ideas that feel important to you right now?
On the one hand, I'm a productivity beast, and I'm just like, oh, there's a need, situation has changed, like people need help, like let's coordinate, let's organize, let's do stuff, let's stay busy. But I also recognize that my tendency to do that is often unhealthy. We're all supposed to stay at home, but be not even just as productive as before, but more productive, because it's like all you have is time and you should just be working all the time and then doing all the projects that you were never had time for. And in reality, it's like feeling sad and anxious takes a lot of time, and doing things for other people will also help you mentally. But if you don't also balance that with taking care of yourself, especially when it's these crazy circumstances that we've not ever experienced in our lifetimes, you got to give yourself some time. So I'm trying to balance it.
There was something really interesting in what you just said, though, about how as one individual, you're trying not to get caught in the trap of productivity. And then you're also talking about how capitalism, which is, you know, a system that it thrives on some people's productivity, right, is not prepared to kind of take care of itself in the face of a looming health threat. So there's a way that this plays out for you as just one human, and then there's a way that it's playing out systemically.
Definitely. And I feel like it's interesting to try to sit back and reflect on, I guess, some of my personal impulses and wondering where they're coming from. Because I think there's the good impulse that's like, I need to stay busy. I need a project that can occupy my mind and alleviate some of my anxiety. But then there's also the impulse that comes from, you know, just growing up in a system where if you take some time to do nothing, like that is lazy. And I don't want to be productive only out of that impulse, if that makes sense.
Those were just parts of big conversations I'm grateful to have had today. Thanks so much to all the people who I've been speaking with lately and who gave some time today to open a little window into what they're thinking about. I appreciate so much these conversations with friends and family that look at the little ways and big ways things are changing right now, that recognize the time we're in, what we have in front of us immediately, and what we'll have in front of us down the line. For your New Mexico government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
To get a better idea of how people are adapting to our changing world, I decided to call up some folks I know. My siblings, a few of them. Called some old friends, called some new friends, called some former colleagues and former students. Here's a gathering of what they had to say.
I am Saida Arake Colonna, and I am an actress and humanitarian.
Oh, hi. I am Atif Colonna. I'm an aspiring car designer. I'm in school for car design.
I am Asul Amaral, creative director.
I am Aisha Hopkins, and I work as a background actor in New Mexico film and television.
I am Marnie Prince, and I love animals.
I am Zeus Zamora, and I am a small business owner and event coordinator, and I do a little bit of community outreach as well. I'm also, actually, you know what, I'm also a dad now as well, so that's kind of a very big part of my life.
I am Rosanna Martinez. I am a journalist.
And I am J. Martin Torres, and I'm unemployed.
I am Roscoe Floyd, aka DJ Flow Fader, and I teach students, adults and kids, the correct way on how to DJ.
I am Benjamin Eaglin, and I am an artist educator.
What's good, big bro?
That was my baby sister, Afi Rukavinka. She is the mom of four fantastic kids. I asked her how everything was going at home.
Okay, well, as you know, my husband is very into sports, and he's like, sports really govern this country in a lot of ways, and we are seeing how it does, I think, for those people who were in denial before. And I was like, yeah, it just so happened to be on his birthday. it was like the day or two after the NBA was like, nah, we're good. Or maybe it was a couple of days after, I forgot, because they matter to me, but so much, right? But here's the deal. So it was on his birthday, and we were like, you know what? They're not going to school. That's it. Because I'm not sitting here going to wait and have somebody coughing on my kid or being around. I was like, no, they need to shut it down. And if they're not going to shut it down, I'm shutting it down. I don't care. They can get mad at me. I don't care. I'm their parent. And so we took our kids out before. We did our shopping a couple weeks before we got, because we could see it was coming. We were like, why are they not calling it? Why are they not calling it? We were frustrated. So we've actually been kind of great. And I say that because we've been wanting to homeschool, but having four children, 9, 7, 5, and 1, yes, it took me a long time. Having that many kids and then all the different grade levels, it's like, okay, how do I manage? But fortunately, we both kind of work from home. So it's like, can we make it happen? Whatever. So we have been contemplating that, and this just kicked it into action. Has it been difficult? Yeah, because our kids, like, they're like angels in school. They're like, hey, you know, your kids are always participating, and they're so smart, and they do this. It's like they don't do wrong. And we're like, oh, you should come home. But home, they, like, they're their true selves, but also showing us, you know, a little more in depth of what their teachers are getting. So it's been kind of, it's been good for everybody because, like, we're all getting to know each other in a more dynamic way. And it's more intense, but the flow in our house is dope.
Something I asked everyone was how they are adjusting to life as it is now.
I didn't realize that how little time I actually spent at my house. I think for years, at least the last 3 or 4 years, I've treated my home as a place where I basically like drop my stuff and go and I sleep. So like my kitchen table is always covered in papers. There's always laundry that takes forever to be folded. And it hasn't always been a very peaceful space. It's just been like a space in between wherever I'm trying to get next. And then now, like, I can't go to the coffee shop. I can't go on the bus to the other side of town just for fun. So it's like I've had to like really look at my space and make it peaceful and livable. So, and in the past, it would be like I would take maybe one day and try to clean my whole house. And it would be awful. And I just want to get it over with. But now it's like I'm really looking at my space. And every day I clean one or two things. So it feels like my house is always clean because I'm always cleaning it without it being overwhelming. And that has just made me enjoy it more. Like last week I took an hour or two and I completely cleaned my porch. Like I swept up all the leaves, all the cigarettes that ended up there from my neighbors, all the broken, like just whatever that just kind of like collects, like the dust. And I swept it all out. I washed all the pillows and everything. And my dog and I have been out there every single day since. And it's so nice just be outside and we see our neighbors and I feel like we're breathing better. And that feels like my whole house is like that. Like I can breathe, I can rest, I can relax. I'm just not waiting for my next job or where I have to go next or who I have to see next.
I've never been on unemployment before. It's weird. I feel like a loser, you know, and Rose told me not to feel like that because I'm a taxpayer. And it's just been a lot of like eye-opening experiences, you know, a lot of stuff I took for granted, you know. Even being able to just go walk outside and take a breath of fresh air. You're scared that that breath of fresh air is going to kill you now, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because of my role, you know, a spiritual leader of a faith community, you know, my personal experience and what I am seeing in people around me, you know, they mirror each other in many ways. And in other ways, they're startlingly different. And so, you know, my personal experience is I had found myself, you know, in the year or two before this pandemic, really trying to work out balance, right? Really trying to figure out how to get more time with my family and, you know, my partner and working through, you know, how to get that work-life balance. And so basically I've been complaining, like, I don't have enough time with my family and I don't know how to work less. And
this has been a blessing to me. And so I am getting time with my family, and I am delighting in it. And so for me, there is a blessing in this that I've been really longing for. And so that is sort of set in there with, and I am also profoundly aware of folks that are suffering and folks who are not in a living situation that is beautiful and full of love, and folks who have nowhere to shelter in place. So I'm having this personal experience, and I'm wildly aware of what other people are experiencing. But what I would say, one of the things that has changed for me is, I feel like my belief in spirit or God or the universe or the divine or mother, father, God, Allah, all of that, has deepened. You know, I have had a deepening in my faith, a deepening in my belief in humanity, which has been probably the most exciting. It's like, wow, I already believed in our inherent goodness, but this, I'm just now seeing it more clearly than I have before.
This whole thing has definitely affected me in a negative way, because I am a weekend warrior, so I DJ professionally, and there is no more weekend. There's no more nightlife. There's no more entertainment, which means there's no financial stimulation. I've lost that. So as of right now, I am I'm unemployed, and will soon be applying for unemployment. This has affected me negatively, and to the point where I am a bit nervous, man. I'm afraid of the future. I'm not sure on what to look forward to continue my DJing career. Fortunately, I'm taking online classes to transition into another field of work. But right now, it's nervous, man. It's pretty scary.
I think I'm a bit of a unique situation in that I've spent the last couple years moving away from the restaurant industry, and I started painting houses, and I've been struggling for the last pretty much 2 years, so much so that when the holidays came around and I had no work, I did go back to the restaurant industry part-time. So financially I've been in a tight spot already. So that hasn't changed. The fact that everyone else is now where I am is the big change. And certainly, I think that the most beautiful thing is how everyone is reconnecting. Like I'm talking to my cousins. I got a group chain of 17 cousins that I haven't talked to much in years since I lived on the East Coast. My immediate family, all seven of us get on Zoom from Bali to LA to Albuquerque to DC. And we've been a couple times a week, and that's been lovely. And you see the little nieces and the nephew. That's been a regular occurrence, which is definitely a change. All the tools, all the beautiful things that I share with my students in terms of transformation within a character, but now like in real life, how to deal with stress and find your internal power. That has been the practice, right? Every day we have to, find our internal power, because certainly that which is the external is failing all around us. So in some ways it's really sort of encouraging. And my hope is that we as a collective people, as a society, get grounded very much in our internal power versus our external. And then that will start to show up in this upcoming election and in our social services and in our systems that we support in this society with our tax dollars.
you know, this is, you know, we've been due a challenge like this because we've, you know, genuinely just sucked lately as a human race. I mean, we suck, and we sort of deserve to, you know, have to really look at that reflection in the mirror and evaluate who we are and decide what we're going to come to the plate with next. Because if we come to the plate with the same that we kept on coming to, then we're going down. I mean, there's no way Mother Nature is going to, like, actually, you know, deal with our any longer.
You know, people are in such different places in their lives, though, too. You know, some people are really concerned about just survival. Other people are having a hard time coping with the, you know, uncertainty of their situation or the, you know, perceived lack of control. You know, that's the thing too, is it's like, we're all in it together. And I definitely have noticed that everyone's really digesting it and interpreting it in a different way. You know, it's like, you see these people that seemingly have a ton of free time. And then like myself, I feel like I'm almost busier than I was before. I know that sounds wild, but you know, there's just a lot of things. There's a, like I said, a lot of fires to put out, a lot of things to try, you know, that I need to do to try to kind of ensure the survival of my business and just my way of life, if possible. Although if it changes, I'm kind of okay with that too, you know?
I mean, I'm still trying to figure that out. Because I think there are so many ways that we can see this as punishment, and that's actually not, that's taking us out of ourselves. I think that we can learn to take the time we need to reevaluate how we practice in our health, how we take care of ourselves, how we take care of others, how we talk about ourselves, what drives us. And if there's a change to be made, if there's enhancements to be made based off of that truth, then finding ways to make those changes and embrace this as a moment where this reflection has brought us closer to ourselves. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, let out the mass murderer in you. I'm talking about, like, how we can use this time to actually enhance ourselves and also connect us to other humans and our humanity. I'm really, really big on this, on humanity. We do not have to agree. But I have to, you know, I have to recognize the human in you. I'm Buddhist, and I'm supposed to recognize the Buddha in everyone, and it is challenging.
That's the end of part one. More to come next week, and trust me, they all have a lot to say, particularly my siblings, as we're known to be quite a loquacious clan. Hey, let's talk about some resources for the day, shall we? Cool. Find a full list of all the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to help or donate online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Something super important for everyone to know, the state has guaranteed free testing for coronavirus and free treatment. So if you don't have health insurance, don't let that stop you from seeking care. It also covers illnesses related to COVID, like flu or pneumonia. And if you get billed for it, you think it's unfair? Call the OSI Managed Healthcare Bureau at 1-855-427-5674. That's 1-855-427-5674. Don't forget to give us a call to find out what is going on with you. Call 505-218-7084. We will play your messages on our show. You can email us at yournmgov@gmail.com. Got a great show coming for you Monday. You're really going to like it. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. We are grateful for the help from Taylor Velasquez, Bryce Dix, and Hannah Colton on all the editing. Theme music is done by Pope. Yes, yes, y'all. Don't forget, you can hear us on KUNM's airwaves next week, 7:30 p.m. online. Find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation and the New Mexico Local News Fund. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil Ekolona. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.